Welcome to Running Start, the podcast that's been made to run to. Brought to you by VHI, sponsors of the VHI Women's Mini Marathon. 5 episodes of increasing length, designed to help you gradually work up to 10K on the big day, or any routes after that. In episode 4, for your 60-minute session, you'll hear Cora Staunton.
I'm Cora Staunton, former Mayo Ladies footballer and current AFLW player with the Greater Western Sydney Giants. My journey with the GAA and how I got involved probably started at a very young age. I'm from a place in Mayo called Cairnicun, which is a small rural town, probably about 15 minutes outside Castlebar. So really all probably started in National School, Cairnicun National School. I went there along with my 7 other siblings, so I've 4 brothers and 3 sisters. I'm second youngest in the family, so obviously growing up in a rural community, my dad being a farmer and my mom was a housewife at the time, so yeah, growing up in a big family kind of toughens you up, and I suppose sport was always there around the house, whether it was just kicking the football in the garden or just playing with my brothers and sisters. And I suppose in Cairnicun National School it came along, and I think it was around the age of 7 that I really got into sport. You know, back then it wasn't a thing that a lot of girls would be involved in sport, but I was lucky we had a school principal at the time who pushed everyone to play sport. So yeah, I just really got into it. He just encouraged me all the time to play, and I suppose around the age of 7 they realised I was quite talented, and ended up, you know, a lot of the time spending the majority of my day playing, whether it was, you know, Gaelic football, soccer, basketball. You know, our school was located right beside the community centre, so we played everything. I suppose the Gaelic football element then, you know, started where after I was playing in school for a couple of you know, months, the local Gaelic football coach for the boys said, would I have any interest in joining the boys team? You know, this is back in time where there was no girls football. Yeah, so I tagged along with my 2 brothers, my younger brother and my older brother, and we used to cycle for a couple of miles to get to the Gaelic football pitch. And yeah, I played with the boys then for maybe 5-6 years because there was no girls football for the first few years, and just loved it. And then another girl from another part of our club joined as well. So it was the 2 of us playing with the boys from about 7 to the age of 13, 14. I think a girls club, underage club formed when I was about 11, and that was the start of it for me, ladies football wise, and that was through community games, getting to Mosny. So yeah, it was really from school and home that, you know, my love of sport started, and yeah, it hasn't dwindled since then, and it's continued till now. Certainly in the area of female role models, there were few and far between. Certainly in the GAA sphere, there wasn't any ladies football on TV. When I was growing up, it was all men's football. So yeah, a lot of my, you know, role models for GAA were certainly men. And in sport in general, Roy Keane was a huge role model of mine. But yeah, from a female point of view, the only role model that I had growing up from a sporting element was Sonia O'Sullivan, because she was visible on television. Obviously at the time, the Olympics, she was world champion, and she was, whether it was paper or TV, she was everywhere to be seen. And yeah, I'm certainly never going to be a long distance runner. It's certainly not one of my strengths, but I love just watching what Sonia has done for women's sport across Ireland and further abroad. And you know, I suppose I was lucky enough, and in later years, Sonia now lives in Australia, and I've met her a good few times, and she's been at a good few of my matches. So you know, it's amazing when you grow up that you look up to someone like that, and all of a sudden they turn around and they're at a game watching you, and you know, you become friends, and you know, you're texting each other and stuff like that. So yeah, she was certainly a role model, and it's amazing, you know, all these years later, she's still, you know, people, you know, women that, you know, talk about their interest in sport and what motivates them, she's still top of their list, which is wonderful to see. Yeah, getting the call up to the ladies football team, I suppose I need to go back a bit. When I left primary school in Cairnicun, you know, normally you follow your siblings to whatever school they go. So all my siblings would have gone to a different school, but I was very adamant as a 12-year-old going into first year that I didn't want to go to the same secondary school as my other siblings. And that wasn't just because I didn't want to see them or hang out with them. It was more because the school that they were the secondary school they were at didn't offer very little sport for girls. And, you know, I think they offered volleyball. And while I've played volleyball, it wasn't the one sport, you know, I wanted to excel at. So, yeah, I pushed my parents for probably 6 or 7 months to try and go to a different school that was quite recognised for Gaelic football and other sports. And eventually, they gave in and let me go. So, yeah, my first year took me to Ballinrobe Community School, which was hard because none of my friends would have gone to that school. So that was challenging. And I suppose in first year of school, you know, obviously tried out for both the junior team, which is obviously first year to third year, and then the senior team. And lucky enough, I met both teams and we went on to win All-Ireland with both teams, which, you know, obviously was big for me because it put me out again. It put me there in the eyes of the senior management. And, you know, from at the end of that year, I was picked obviously to play with Mayo at 13 years of age, which, you know, is very young and obviously wouldn't happen nowadays. But again, you know, it was another challenge that I just felt, I was able for that year in particular. And that kind of, you know, couple of months, I think within 2 or 3 months of that, my mother was also diagnosed with breast cancer, which at the time, you know, as a 13-year-old, taking that on board was difficult. But, you know, obviously having all the sport that I had, you know, so I'm 13, I'm playing under 14, 16, minor and senior for both club and county. And then I'm playing a bit of soccer and basketball. So, you know, I'm probably involved with about 11, 12 teams. So from that point of view, it was a great distraction for me to have sport to go to when, you know, things were obviously a little bit rough at home. Certainly I found it difficult handling the attention in my earlier years. Maybe when I was 13, 14, 15, it probably wasn't as tricky. I think maybe when I became, you know, a little bit older in 16, 17, that kind of bracket, that I found it more difficult. I've never seen myself as, you know, famous or a star or anything like that. I just go out and play and put my head down, you know, off the pitch. I'm quite shy and quite reserved as a young person, and, you know, very much stayed to the same group of friends that I'd hang out with all the time. So, yeah, I just played football. Football at the time for me, and especially around, you know, that age of 13, 14, 15, where everything that was going on at home was a big release. You know, it was more so for mentally to help me get over and deal with things that was going on off the pitch. So, you know, I never looked to myself as you know, a role model for young people, even though I was young myself. And yeah, I did, you know, find fame at the time difficult. And as I said, that was later on the years. Certainly it took me a long time to be able to deal with it, and probably was into my early 20s that, you know, I could fully learn how to deal with it. I think it was certainly after my mom passed away that then maybe I you know, fell out of love with sport for a little while. And as a 16-year-old, there was a lot of different emotions. So yeah, I think it was for maybe about 5 or 6 months afterwards, you know, I just didn't play sport. I was angry, you know, I had every mixed emotion. I didn't even know what was going on in my own head. So yeah, I just kind of fell out of love and didn't play football for quite a while. And I suppose it took a while for me to get that love back. But again, I was very lucky. I had, you know, people surrounded, good coaches and friends that, you know, just turn up at the house and bring me, even though I wouldn't train or play or whatever. And eventually by them picking me up every week and me just standing on the sideline and watching, I suppose that passion and love came back for the game. And yeah, got back into it, you know, I think maybe 6 months later, and you know, have never looked back. A year after my mom died, we started on a roll with Mayo where we're winning All-Ireland. So that next kind of 5 or 6 years was an outlet for me, but also an outlet for my family, where we were on a roller coaster with Mayo winning All-Ireland. And yeah, so, you know, it was difficult, but that next 6 years with Mayo was a great way of helping me and my family deal with what happened. The first final we were in was in 99, and that was probably about 11 months after my mother died. But unfortunately, the week before that final, I was at training, normally just playing a practice match against each other. The team was going to be picked for the All-Ireland, and I went in for a ball with one of my teammates and I ended up breaking my collarbone, so I missed the All-Ireland. So I suppose that was another setback for me after, I suppose, the year I'd put in with everything that happened with Mom, and then to break your collarbone in your first ever All-Ireland, still at the age of 17, you know, in fifth year of school, a lot had happened, and I suppose that was, again, another mentally challenging time for me, and struggling and wondering, you know, will I ever get back to Croke Park, and, you know, why is everything kind of happening to me? But then I suppose the next year we got back to the All-Ireland, and, you know, that was huge. That was my, you know, first time to get to play in Croke Park, and, you know, had a very good performance that day. Yeah, so that All-Ireland in 2000 was probably 2 years of really hard work. You know, it was easy for me to say after everything that happened, you know, this is too hard. But yeah, after we won the All-Ireland in 99, for the next probably 8, 9, 10 months, you know, I didn't train harder than I have in my life just to get back to that position. So I suppose, yeah, that game certainly stands out, the All-Ireland final in 2000. It was back in 2018 when I decided to leave the Mayo squad. I came back from Australia after playing my first season in AFL and decided to go back. It was kind of whether I go back or not, whether I retire from Mayo. You know, I was going into my 24th season with Mayo at the time, which, you know, is... when you put it into words, 24, it's a huge chunk of your life, and for anyone that plays intercounty football, it's huge dedication. It's, you know, and when you come from a successful club, it's probably 11 months of the year that you're giving up your time. You probably end up having maybe, you know, December off, but, you know, it's a hard grind. But yeah, I decided to go back, and, you know, obviously, like all good sports people, you're looking for the fairy tale ending and want to end on a high and win an All-Ireland. You know, the previous year we'd been in the All-Ireland final and lost to Dublin. So again, there was a lot of my friends and teammates that, you know, hadn't won All-Irelands at Mayo. I think at the time there's probably two of us that had belonged to the era that won it. So you'd like to have give them girls opportunities to win an All-Ireland and get to Croke Park, and, you know, we nearly done that in 2017. So obviously I went back in 18 thinking we were very close, and, you know, obviously there was a fallout with management, and 12 girls walked away, and I think two members of management, you know, just over, we didn't like the way things were being ran in there, and, you know, girls' mental health was suffering a little bit. So yeah, I just decided to, you know, walk away along with other girls, and you know, as I said, it wasn't, you know, the fairy tale ending that you look at, but, you know, I look back at my time with Mayo as, you know, a wonderful part of my career. You know, I've been lucky enough to play for as long as I have, and, you know, in that time, playing in 24 years, I didn't miss a championship match. I think I missed one league. You know, I've been pretty much injury free for majority of my career, so I've been very lucky that I've got the opportunity, never mind to pull on the Mayo jersey once, to pull it on, you know, hundreds of times. So yeah, certainly my time with Mayo and winning All-Irelands was very special, and, you know, I was very lucky to be in an era where we had a very, very good team. Yeah, it's massively important for me to be still playing with my club team, Cairnacun. It's where I started football, you know, where it's ultimately where you're going to end and be involved in coaching, and which I am at the moment. But, you know, when your career finishes, that, you know, you'll be going to watch matches, you know, involved in teams, whatever it might be. So yeah, it means a huge amount. Like anyone else playing for your club, it's, as I said, we're a small community. I've been playing with girls for you know, close to 20 plus years. We've been friends. There's sisters on the teams, there's cousins on the team, and yeah, we've just been very lucky. We've come from a place that, you know, we have had a lot of success, but, you know, success doesn't just happen overnight. It's down to a lot of hard work. There's nothing more special than playing with your club and winning, whether it's a county title, a Connacht title, in All-Ireland. So everyone that you have, even though we've quite a few, you cherish them as much as you do as your first one. So yeah, it's a special place. Yeah, we're probably not the most liked club in the country, I'd say, but again, that's probably a bit like the Dublin men's footballers at the moment. When you have success, everyone's trying to knock you down. So yeah, I just think it's really important to, you know, why I still play with them now is, yeah, I've had success and I've won everything in the game, but the reason I still play is because there's a lot of underage girls in our team that hasn't had that success, and you'd like to give them that success and help them be successful, because you know how much winning a trophy with your club is, and you want girls now, maybe they're coming up at 15, 16, 17 to be able to have that experience, and thankfully over the past few years they've had that.
You've been going for 15 minutes. Doing good.
Sometimes, you know, work-life balance is a good thing. You know, my early career after I left college, I worked in sport for a little while, and, you know, I probably struggled with that because it was, my life was dominated by too much sport and work and then playing, you know, all the time. So, you know, I decided to kind of go down a career and I went back to college and done a master's in health promotion and decided that my work would take me with the HSC, and I was working with Traveller Women for a long time. And to say that was, you know, amazing. They really, it was such empowering work to work with a community that are, you know, so suppressed, and, you know, to see how they have grown with my time working with them. You know, I ended up, I think I was there for maybe 10 or 11 years, to see them women grow over that period, and to see them, you know, grow from, you know, being really shy, you know, women that didn't really say much to being women, now they're role models for the community. So I think having that type of work and being away from sport, you know, and just going totally left field. And these were people, I suppose, in most other jobs that you go, when you're high profile, everyone wants to talk about sport and recognise you. And sometimes work isn't work, because on a Monday morning, all they want to do is talk about the match that you might play at the weekend. So, yeah, these women didn't want any of that. Yeah, they'd know I'd be on telly now and again, and they congratulate me, but they just seen me for Cora the person rather than Cora the footballer, and sometimes that can get very muddled within the work sphere. So yeah, I really enjoyed that, and, you know, my time with them, I had massive respect for them, and to watch them grow into what they've grown was amazing. What I love about the feel of the women's mini marathon is the coming together of so many women that maybe have never done exercise in their life. And there's, you know, there's all elements. There's people that are only starting off, to obviously people that are competitive and are trying to win it. And it's like, some people run it, some people walk it, some people walk and run it. And it's just the camaraderie on the way around, and just the chats and, you know, the friendship that you have on the day that really makes it. It makes the 10K go so quickly. So that's what I love. I just think it's really empowering that you have all sorts of women, no matter what age, no matter what fitness ability, they just come together to run and raise a lot of money for a charity. I just think it's amazing. What you do when you're doing a 10K or any long distance run, you just take 1K at a time. You know, you have to build yourself up for anything. You can't just say to yourself, okay, I'm going to go out and run 10K. It takes a little bit of training, and that's to start off. If you want to walk 1K, depending on your fitness levels, you do your 1K, do it for 1K for a week, couple of days in the week, and just slowly build it up. You're competing against yourself, and yourself only is really important. You know, it's not anyone else that's beside you. It's you're just going out to do it for you. So you're going to try and go out and do your best in whatever time you get. So I think the biggest way to keep motivated is for me, when I'm training, is just to have a routine. You know, I know when the week starts, the days that I'm going to run. I know that when the week starts, the days I'm going to do my gym, and I know when the week starts, the days I'm going to do nothing. So it's really important just to have structure in your week. You know, set out a plan, say to yourself, I'm going to start off, do my 2 or 3 1Ks this week, or maybe throw in a 2K, and develop it and build it up over the weeks leading into September. It's all about having structure and not being too hard on yourself. If you miss a session, that's all right, it always can be made up. My age now, recovery is probably important. Certainly what I, you know, like to do after a run, or, you know, any sort of hardish training session straight away, is to do some form of a warm down or a cool down. So that's whether that's a light jog and different sorts of stretches that needs to be done. So things like that. And then, yeah, I certainly like to do a bit of foam rolling and stretching every night. That's just a religious thing for me, you know, 10 minutes every night where I'm just stretching out, foam rolling. They're the type of recovery things. But I think the most important thing is recovery, that you're not doing something every day. There's no point trying to do exercise 7 days a week because you're just going to burn yourself out. It's really important that you give yourself your days off where you don't do any. You can do some form of walking or something, but you're actually not doing, you know, a 2K, a 4K, whatever it is, that you give yourself days off and let your body recover. In 2017, I was asked to join the Greater Western Sydney Giants, or the GWS Giants as they're known, to play in the AFLW. At the time, I didn't really know much about AFLW. I knew there was an AFL men's competition, but this was going to be their second season of the competition, and the Giants hadn't done too well in their first season. They came last. So they had got a new coach for the 2017-2018 season. So how it all really came about was that I was in Shanghai, in China. I was an ambassador for the Asian GAA Games. So for people that don't know, the Asian GAA Games is a coming together of GAA clubs right throughout Asia. And you wouldn't think there'd be that many, but there's quite a few. So I think there was well over 1,000 players coming to Shanghai for the weekend to play in a kind of a competition that's like the All-Ireland final weekend. So, yeah, I was in Shanghai and there was other ambassadors there. Myself, Michal Marhertic, have been ambassadors for a few years. And then there was a guy called Nicholas Walsh, who's formerly from Cavan, but had been working in Australia for a number of years. So yeah, I got chatting to Nicholas and he was telling me about his role in Sydney, what he worked as. And Nicholas was working with the Giants at the time in the men's program with their AFL team. And he just was telling me about his work and how he got involved. And yeah, he then went on to say that, that the Giants had an AFLW team. They were one of the first clubs to get into the competition. And that was basically it. Would I ever have interest in playing? And I was like, no, I think that's long gone. So that was October. I went back home after the week in Shanghai, back to Ireland, and Nicholas went back to Australia. And yeah, I suppose I think it was sometime in April 2017, I get an email from Nicholas saying that the Giants had their poor first season and they got a new coach, and the new coach happened to be in the men's program as well, and Nicholas was very friendly with them. And he had suggested to him that, you know, he should get someone over from Ireland to play. And he told Alan, who's our coach now and was the coach at the time, said, he approached him to say, would you like to get someone over from Ireland? And yeah, our emails were passed on to each other. And from there, he rang me and just said, would you have any interest coming over and playing? And I was like, if anyone knows me, I kind of say yes to a lot of things, but then kind of put it on the back foot and don't worry about it until it happens. And so yeah, we chatted for a couple of months, but I was in the height of the season with Mayo. Mayo got to the All-Ireland final in 2017, so you know, there was no opportunity. They wanted me to come to Sydney for a trial for a week, but anyone that knows me, you know, I'm not going to miss any training with Mayo. So yeah, there was just no opportunity. So I needed to get out kind of before, I think it was the 25th of October. That's when draft day is and the last time you can sign. So Mayo got lost to All-Ireland and we're straight into club championship at Cairnacun. So the weeks were going by. We're now in October and I still can't get out. And he's saying, oh, why can't you miss a, you know, game? And I'm like, absolutely no way. So eventually we get a free weekend with Cairnacun. We win a Connacht semi-final and we have a Connacht final 2 weeks later. So yeah, I fly to Australia the day after the morning after the Connacht semi-final. As it happens, I need to be out there before the draft is on the Wednesday in Australia. So I fly on a Sunday, but as it happens, there's a bit of a visa mix-up, so I don't get to Australia. I'm a bit delayed, so I don't get to Australia till Tuesday morning. And this guy who I've never met picks me up at the airport Alan McCollin, who, as I said, was her coach then and still is. So Al picked me up at the airport, me standing there, no idea who he was, drove straight to the club. Thankfully, Nicholas then came into the club, and you know, I sat for coffee and breakfast with the two of them, and then we'd done a bit of a trial out in the Oval. And yeah, I think I was out there for about an hour, and then we come back and he said, would you like to sign? And I had to give an answer pretty much straight away. So I said yes, again, probably putting it thinking this is far away, I'll be going home and playing with Carnacone for another few months, and head down to Melbourne the next morning for the draft. And yeah, it's announced then that I've signed for the Giants, and obviously it comes out in the media in Ireland, and fly home, that's on a Wednesday, fly home on a Saturday after a lunch with Michael Dee. As it happens, Michael Dee, our president, is in Australia at the time, so RTÉ News decides to come to the club and interview me and invite me to dinner with Michael Dee. So that was pretty cool in the Botanic Gardens in Sydney. Fly home on the Saturday and win a Connacht title the following weekend with Carnacone, and our run with Carnacone brings us to an All-Ireland, and we win the All-Ireland. And I fly out 2 days after the All-Ireland, so I missed probably the first month of pre-season because I'm with Carnacone, and fly out early December, and yeah, the rest is history. That's 2017, and now we're going into 2022, and yeah, I'm still playing with them. I think the transition from obviously going from an amateur setup in the GAA to a professional setup in the AFL, yeah, there's big differences, and there's not such big differences. For me, it probably started with being the biggest difference of all is that I'm going into a new team, a new sport. You know, I suppose I hadn't been involved in a new team in quite a long time because I've been playing obviously senior football at Mayo for so long and with my club. And while I dabbled in other sports, rugby or whatever it is, I always knew people involved in them sports. But I suppose I'm going all the way across the world and I don't know anyone. I'm the only Irish, you know. I sound different, and they keep telling me that. They couldn't understand me for a good while, so I had to learn to speak a bit slower. And yeah, you're going out to 29 other, you know, people, girls that, you know, wondering who this person is. You know, I can say it now, but at the time, you know, they probably weren't, some of them weren't probably too happy to see, you know, an Irish girl coming over, taking a spot. And yeah, a lot of them had spent a lot of time on Google wondering who I was. So yeah, I suppose I arrived out, the first day I arrived out, which was difficult for me because they had already been there together for at least a month. So I arrived out 2 days after we'd won the All-Ireland with Carnacone. Not particularly happy that I had to leave the celebrations either. I arrive out with badly bruised ribs as well from the final. So there's a lot going on. And then you arrive over, I think the first day I trained was 37 degrees heat. So there's all of this going on. I'm new into a team, there's the heat, I'm injured. So yeah, there's so much going on. And, you know, I arrive in Sydney on a Thursday morning, and I have to, you know, be at training on Thursday afternoon. So yeah, it took me certainly a while to settle. You know, as I said earlier, I'm quite a shy individual, and you know, I'm finding my own surroundings, but learning to be in a new environment. And you know, the Australians are a little bit different to the Irish, so to learn all that, it certainly took a while. So the first few weeks, yeah, and then it comes into the Christmas period, it's very difficult, you're away from home. So yeah, I really didn't settle probably till mid-January, till we had one of our first kind of challenge matches. And yeah, I think the biggest thing is I had to prove myself to the girls over there. As I said, I probably hadn't had to do that for a long time. So the only way I could prove myself was training hard and working hard. And I suppose I was lucky enough when we played our first challenge match, you know, I had a relatively good game. And yeah, I think that was kind of the, you know, the period where everything started to settle for me and I started to really enjoy it. And like that, then, yeah, you're in a high performance environment with everything on hand, whether that's the resources of, you know, the gym, everything is there. You have full-time strength, conditioning, psychologist, nutritionist, you have just everything on hand. So, you know, you're not going to fail. If you want to put in the hard work, you're only going to get better. So I suppose that's what I did. And yeah, I think people started to realise my personality that, you know, I was a very hard worker and that I wanted to try and get to the top. And yeah, I suppose I've been doing that ever since. But yeah, it took a settling period. There was certainly a time where I was like, oh God, what am I doing? And yeah, probably a 23 or 24 hour flight of that much thinking time isn't good either. But yeah, I love it now. Yeah, it took a little while to love it, but yeah, I absolutely love it now.
That's the 30-minute mark. Keep it up.
Like in any sport, injury obviously plays a major part. Some people are very lucky, they'll go through their career and not have any serious injuries, but there's always going to be a percentage that will. And sometimes when you get injured, it can be career ending and that's it. And that's very difficult to deal with. And yeah, for me, I suppose in 2019, I was playing a game over there on a Saturday and just had ball in hand and was trying to take someone on, and my foot got caught in the ground and they went to tackle me. And yeah, as I was going down, I could hear my leg crunching, and yeah, brought to hospital and had broke my leg in three places, my ankle in one. At the time, it was certainly career ending. I didn't know where from there. And obviously you're away from home, it's quite a lonely place, even though you have your teammates and everyone else there. I was lucky my brother was still in Australia, he moved home a month later. It certainly was a very challenging period for me individually. A lot of the time, a lot of people, while they don't say it to you, indirectly they're saying to you, they don't think that you'll get back. So yeah, there was one or two people I suppose said that to me early days, and that's the only small little bit of motivation that I needed. I'm very much the type of person that if I only need a little snippet of motivation from someone to say I can't do something, and then it's hell for leather. I'm all go. Recovery wise, I broke my leg the first 2 weeks. I couldn't really do anything. Had a rod and five screws put into it. Thankfully I wasn't casted, which meant I could recover quicker. The first 2 weeks were quite challenging. I was in a lot of pain. I had done a good bit of nerve damage to my leg as well, so my big toe didn't decide to work for about 9 months. But there was challenges along the way. So my rehab process started. I got my stitches out on week two, or 14 days in, and went to the club. I decided to stay in Australia and do my rehab. Went to the club and done my first cycle on a stationary bike for, I think it was allowed to cycle for 2 minutes, and that was day 14. And 6 days a week then for probably 7-ish months that I was in rehab, probably 4 hours a day, just pushing myself to get back. I was very lucky, I had a top class strength conditioning coach and physio that helped me. And I was back playing, fully training. It happened in May, I was back fully training. Start of December, and played my first match in January. So played a sneaky match at home or two with Cairnacone in October, but I don't think the club in Australia were too happy. So that was probably only 5.5 months after I'd broken it. But that's two-ish years now. The leg is all good. I've played 2 seasons since with the Giants and 2 seasons with Cairnacone. What I really love about the game is just it's the physicality. In Gaelic football, you probably don't have that physicality. It's a bit of a mixture between Gaelic football and rugby. So we have the tackle. I love the physicality and being able to, be involved in, tackling people and being tackled and all of that. I suppose the biggest thing is just that you're training in an environment that offers you everything, and as I said earlier on, you only can get better. So the facilities and having the time, and you're put first all the time, you don't have to work. That difference to me was huge, that I had time now to recover and make myself better. I have time to do extra sessions, all of that. I absolutely love watching AFL, whether it's the men's season that's on the go at the moment. Like, I'd watch any match. I just love watching it and learning, and I think that's just because I love the thought of a new challenge. Like, when I went over there, I was you know, there's 30 girls, I'm the worst one there. When I arrive over, I've never played the game, and should try and get better and better each week, each month, each year that you're out there and trying to get to the top, like you had to do in Gaelic football. I suppose that goes back to my personality. It was like, you know, when I broke my leg badly, it was more the challenge of getting back and proving people wrong. That's what I really enjoyed, and I suppose that's what I'm enjoying now, the challenge of getting better. I want to get to the top of the game. I'd certainly get nervous before games. Obviously the bigger the game, the more nervous you get. But you know what, even when I'm playing a club game now, there'll always be a hint of, you don't think you're nervous, but you know that the way that your body is reacting, that you are a little bit nervous. It mightn't be that, like, oh, you feel nervous, but you know, certainly the way your body reacting, whatever it might be. So I do. As I said, probably the bigger the game, the more nerves that come out. I suppose my first challenge match that I had with the Giants, there was so much going on and so much that I didn't know, that you can either get yourself into such a worry and such a rut that, oh, I don't know the rules, because I didn't know what, I don't know where I'm meant to be running, I don't know what I'm meant to be doing, because this was probably on the back of probably 5 weeks training, if even, of learning a whole new game. So I actually didn't know what I was doing, so that probably made it a little bit easier. I was lucky, I was surrounded by people that helped me a bit. I just think, and then I'm worrying about, because again, I'm going on about, you know, how warm it was. Again, that day it was probably about 36, 37. So I'm wondering, will I survive in this heat? There's so much other worry. So I was lucky, the coach over there, who I have a very good relationship. I remember that morning of the game, he's like, don't worry about anything, don't worry about structures, don't worry about rules, don't worry about performance, just go out and enjoy yourself and just do what you naturally do on a Gaelic football pitch. And I think that's what I did. I just went out and ran around and just enjoyed it like I was a 12 or 13 year old playing a Gaelic football match. So I think his advice, not to, you know, stress or anything like that, just do what you'll do. And I think since he told me that day, I kind of have a tendency to, you know, just play very, you know, off the cuff type of a game. And I think a lot of the Irish do it over that, because we've certainly different attributes to the Australians that the Australians don't have, and you know, the AFL world over there love it. In terms of a coaching style that gets the best out of me, it's a little bit of a mixture. Yeah, majority of the time I like a coach that, you know, tells you, okay, yeah, you didn't perform well, and again, I like to prove him wrong. But at the same time, it's probably every now and again an arm put around the shoulder, say, God, that's great work. It's probably a mixture of both. When I'm here in Ireland and I have to do my training program from Australia, obviously I'm doing it on my own. I'm not doing it with the team. So, that to me is difficult. So we'd say, as I said, I have to maybe run at the moment 3 times a week, you know, outside of my own club training. It's not as like, oh, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's morning for running. I probably have to spend about 2 hours motivating myself in my mind to get up and go and do it. And it can take longer some days. I'll always do it, but it can take a long time to do it. So I could be telling myself, OK, I'm going to do it at 7 o'clock in the morning. It could be still 9 o'clock and I haven't done it. But yeah, it just takes that motivation. It's, to me, it's probably guilt. I'd never want to let the team down or people down, so I'll always end up doing it. But it does take, there's days that you're not motivated. It's more difficult than other days. And certainly the physical aspect of it, of running and stuff, can be quite difficult to motivate yourself. Again, going back to my injury, I probably found that very difficult. There was a period when I was injured. I came home probably 5.5 months into my injury. So I had a period about 10 weeks at home on my own where I didn't have my strength conditioning coach and physio. We're in Ireland and it was October, November time, and you have the wind and the rain, and trying to motivate yourself to go out and do your rehab and do it to the letter of the law every day. There was times I was coming home from work going, oh my God, it's teeming down rain. I'm after working till 6 o'clock, and now I'm driving out and going to the local GAA pitch to do probably a 2 hour session, to then go to the into the gym and do an hour session. I'm not going to be home till 9. Will I skip one? Will it really matter? It'd never happen. I'd go to the pitch, I'd have a little talk to myself in my head, and slowly just do one thing at a time. And even when I'm running, I'll do one thing at a time. If I have to do 8 sets or 8 reps of a run, I'll say, okay, maybe I'll do 4. I don't know if I'll be fit for 8, but then I'll do the 5th one, and then I'm like, no, I'll try a 6th one. So you just keep little small things in your head, keep talking to yourself, and yeah, you'll end up doing it, and you'll finish, and you'll feel great. I think it's really important to have a work-life balance, and from the point of view that you have to get it right. Like, you cannot work too much and not be able to get out and do some form of exercise, and the other side, you cannot put exercise too much and not put too much into work. So yeah, I always found that, like, in Australia, yeah, you've obviously more free time in your hands, but I suppose that free time, you try to see to yourself how should you spend it. And I struggled for the first year I went over there, because my life at home would be very different to my life in Australia. My life at home is just hectic. You know, it's going from probably 7 in the morning to 11 at night. And then you go to Australia and you have so much time in your hands, and you're just wondering what you should do. So I learned to probably slow down a bit, which I probably needed to do. Probably learned to look after my mental health a lot more, and just done things, other things that, you know, maybe interest me outside of sport. Obviously I like doing media work, so just even taking up a couple of courses, stuff like that. I'm kind of in Australia involved in mentoring a lot of our younger players. We've girls that are maybe 18, 19, 20, but have moved interstate, so, you know, they're not from Sydney, so it's a big move from them. So, you know, I've spent a lot of my time over there now. You know, I've been doing a mentoring program with a lot of these girls. It's very difficult. You know, everyone that comes to play for the Giants are seen as, you know, professional athletes, but they've lives outside of, they've trouble, they've difficulties, whether it's, you know, home life, whether it's with their sexuality, whatever it is. So yeah, you're just there as a mentor. So I've really enjoyed that time trying to develop them as an athlete, but more important, trying to develop them as people and individuals, and help them grow. Because to realise that, you know, while sport is a really unique thing, and it's a really brilliant thing, that it's really important to have something outside of it, whether that's your education, your degree, whatever it might be, your work. So it's just to teach them, yeah, put all their energies and efforts certainly into their sport and career, but also have something outside of it, and, you know, to enjoy their lives. They're only young women, that, you know, you have to have that balance, whether that's, you know, socially, that they're mixing with their own age group and their peers and stuff. So yeah, I kind of really enjoy that work, and, you know, help them and grow. And I've been kind of doing that for the last number of years in Australia. And, you know, I've kind of taken up a leadership role as well within the club. So yeah, any of that work I really enjoy. And I suppose when I was younger and their age, I certainly had girls in our team that we probably didn't see it as mentoring, but was happening all the time. So yeah, it's really important to do that. And you know, girls are coming through now, whether they're 16, 17, 18, 19. It's a very difficult period of your life, and there's a lot happening. So when they have someone they can lean on and maybe just openly and honestly talk to, it's really important. And it's something that I love that the club in Australia do.
45 minutes done and dusted. Keep it up.
With my autobiography coming out in 2018, I suppose the reason I wrote it, it wasn't out of choice really. I suppose that came from that I decided to write it. So I obviously picked my ghostwriter, and yeah, it was probably, I think it was maybe about, 16 to 18 month process of writing the book. Luckily for me, I was in probably Australia for some parts of that. So, it was probably made harder for the ghostwriter and easier for me, because, I could dip in and out when I wanted, and probably wasn't making life too easier for her. I found the experience of writing it, quite difficult. The first, couple of sessions, I actually felt like I had come home and been at something like a counselling session. So, we'd done a couple of 4 or 5 hour sessions at the start, and they were quite difficult because you sit back and you talk about your life, and often you don't often reflect on life. And I suppose the biggest thing, I spend a lot of time talking about my mother and her illness and, all of that. And, rural Ireland 20 plus years ago when my mother died, she died and you just moved on and you didn't discuss it really that much. There wasn't counselling services and that offered. So I just felt the first part of it was very difficult, the first few sessions, and after that it got a little bit easier. And yeah, I suppose when the final product then came out, and I suppose in the last 3 years, the messages that I've received and still receive from parents, from young kids, whether it's on social media, in letter form, or just, meeting them in the street, has been overwhelming. And, I realise the importance of it now, and, that what it's done for a lot of young girls that maybe have gone through different, or gone through similar things that I've gone through, and that they, aspire to be someone now. And, I think that's the main reason when I look back there, I wrote it. At the time, it was probably a little bit of pressure on me to write it. But yeah, I'm really happy that it came out so well, and that girls, even 3 years later, I'm still getting a lot of messages to say that, they've taken so much from it, and in time that they'd love to do something like that. I think with my punditry role with RT, I just think it's really important that in any aspect of sport, and I think in Ireland we're getting quite good at it, that you have representation, male and female, across the board. And I think if you look in Ireland with Jackie Hurley, Joanne Cantwell, Yvonne Quillen, Marie Crow, all of these type of people, we have so many talented female analysis commentators, whatever their role is within sport. I think it's really important because for me, again, if we go back to earlier days, role models in sport, it's girls will play sport, some girls will want to get into media, some girls will want to do other things. But I think that within any aspect of life, whether it's in business, whether it's in sport, whether it's in work, whatever it is, that everyone needs role models, we need role models in media. And I'm very much that you don't put people just in the role for the sake of it because they're female. I don't want to be just put in with RT because I'm female and I've played Gaelic football. You want to be put in because you're good enough to be alongside the other male counterparts, So I think that's really important too. But for young girls growing up that watch TV yesterday, that are watching the Olympics at the moment, they watch the news, whatever it is, they see myself, could be Anna Geary doing the Camogie. They see Jackie Hurley presenting the Olympics, whatever, whoever it is. I think it's really important that there's role models for young people growing up, that they can say, well, I can be like Jackie Hurley, I can be like Horace Daunton, I can be like Yvonne Quillen, whoever it is, I can be like Joanne Cantwell. I think that's really important, and I think that's only got better in the last few years. Credit to the sporting element, they've probably got it a lot better than some other elements of society, and long may it continue, because I think, as I said, it's really important, and it doesn't have to be just the young girls growing up. It's just really important for young people growing up to say you can be whoever you want to be. I think it's really important for young people, young girls in particular, to stay involved in sport, not just from a competition point of view. It's very important, there's people that want to compete at a high level in sport, and there's people that just like sport for the social element. And I think the social element of sport is as important as the competitive element in sport. I think when I was growing up, it was the social side of it. Yeah, while I like competition, you love the social side of it. And even now when I look at it, majority of my friendship group have came from different sports, and you know, they're the people that I'll have as friends when I retire from sports. So I think it's really important, because the characteristics and skills that you can learn from sport can't be taught anywhere else. And I'm a firm believer that can't be taught in school or college, or even probably to an extent can't be taught at home. And certainly with me, the things I've learned from sport, I don't think I would have learned anywhere else, whether that's commitment, dedication, resilience, mental toughness, you know, I could go on. Communication, you know, when I was a 16, 17 year old, I wouldn't be able to speak in front of a group. I'd put my head down at the back of the class and wouldn't want to open my mouth. So I think you learn so much, you know, you get self-esteem, confidence. Sometimes place, whether it's the football pitch or, you know, wherever you are, whatever sport you're playing, that's your safe place that you can really learn to grow. That you feel that, you know, 60 minutes you're playing a game, or you might be 60 minutes doing yoga or dancing, whatever it might be, that's your safe haven. So I think that's really important. And I think, yeah, within the GEA, sport in general, we have to look at the difference between competitive and social sport. I think there needs to be more initiatives to right throughout the GEA to get kids, boys and girls, because it's not just girls yet, the dropout rate for boys isn't as high, but there's boys that don't want to play at a high competitive level. I think things like Gaelic Mothers and others that have come in for the older you know, age group, that's something like that needs to be brought in for the younger age group to keep them involved, because unfortunately in the GEA it can, you know, in any club structure, it's all about competitive and winning, and I think we need to somehow get away from that at a younger age. Yeah, certainly when they develop and become a little bit older, it's natural that people are going to be competitive and want to win. But I think, yeah, there can be initiatives that the GAA bring in and other sports bring in to keep girls involved. I know in ladies football they had an initiative called Gaelic for Teens, getting girls involved. And I think that's really important. And I just think from an overall context in sport, to keep people involved in sport, whatever it might be. And I like to put sport as a broad term, because it's not just your basic Gaelic football, soccer, rugby. You know, there's a multitude of sports. You look at all the sports that's going on in the Olympics, that to keep people involved, whether it's at a leisurely, if you want to go out for a leisurely row or if you want to go out for a leisurely cycle, that there should be clubs for both social or leisurely and competitive, and that will keep girls involved. You know, I've been coaching underage for numerous years, and I see girls that drop out 15, 16, and, you know, they're fantastic footballers, but for whatever reason, they just don't want to play anymore. And that's a choice, that's fine. But I've talked to them then when they come back as a 21 or 22-year-old, and they were like, oh, I wished I never dropped out from football, I love it. But then they come back. And I think that's really important, to, you know, why they might be lost in that couple of years, that you're always trying in some way to get them involved in something, whether it's they take the couple of years out and then they come back. I think that's really important. What advice do you have for young people that maybe want to be involved in competitive sport and reach the top? I suppose for me, when you're at a very younger age, the biggest thing for me is enjoyment and fun, because you won't do something for too long if you're not getting some sort of satisfaction out of it. So it's really important, yeah, when you go out and you train hard, that you enjoy doing something. Throughout my career in Gaelic football, you know, playing an amateur sport, I never once felt that it was a chore that I'm going to play for Mayo. You know, and there's often talk about, oh yeah, you know, you're not getting this and you're not getting that. I didn't do that for money or anything. I done it because I loved it and I never found it a chore. I loved trying to improve myself and make myself better at whatever aspect it might be. So I think it's that enjoyment, fun element that can never be taken out of it. You have to do something that you love doing. And I love playing Gaelic football and I love playing sports. So that for me is really important. I think the next thing for young people who are growing up is to realise that what sport can give you, and I just don't mean, oh, the trophies and the medals. Yeah, it can give you a huge opportunity. It has given me a huge opportunity, whether that's going to Australia, travelling the world, whatever it might be. The biggest thing that sport, and you know, when I talk to young people, the biggest thing that sport has given me is the people, the people that you meet, and that's majority, or these are now my friends, but like, these are also people that you meet that you might be from opposition teams, but you meet again in 5 years' time, and you know, you can have a conversation with them. So it's the people that you meet, it's the friendship groups that you create, it's the memories that you create along the way with these friendship groups. That's the most important thing. I think that the people that you meet in sport. support and the friends that you make are certainly the most important thing for young people growing up. So to have fun, to have that social element of sport, and then if you want to aspire to top level sport, it's the biggest thing is the harder you work, the more rewards you'll get. Unfortunately, there's no quick fix. It's not luck or anything. The more work I put in and the harder I work, the more rewards I get. That's the way it is. Practice your skills, work as hard as you can, keep yourself listening to your coaches, stay involved with good people, and the rewards will come. So that's probably the main piece of advice I have. But from a younger age, certainly enjoy it, make your friends. It should be somewhere that you love going every second day or wherever you're going, and that should continue on for the years that you play. How do I stay motivated over a certain period of time, a very long period of time? I suppose each year I probably just set little goals of what I want to achieve, and from there, I suppose if the goals are achieved, you set another goal, and you just want to keep improving and improving. It's something I've been doing for so long. I'm so passionate about it. I love it. I love pushing my body to limits that maybe I didn't think I could push them. Love getting myself fitter and stronger, and love challenging myself against the best individuals, whether it's in Gaelic football or AFL or whatever sport I'm doing. So it's just a challenge and trying to make yourself better all the time. So when you're just passionate about it, and I think the more that you play it, and certainly going to Australia over the last number of years and see how much you can make yourself better in a professional setup, has really opened my eyes. And I suppose when I retire, that's something I want to keep going, whether it's within a coaching role, whether it's in a mentoring role, whatever it is, whether it's in a managerial role. But I want girls that are growing up now, that maybe only 9, 10, 11, whatever, 12, that will get these opportunities in the next few years, that they can go and do whatever they want. They can be a professional AFL player, they can go to the Olympics, that the opportunities are there. I suppose when I was growing up, I wasn't fortunate enough to have these opportunities. These opportunities are now opening up, and they'll open up more and more. So if you want to go to England and be a professional soccer player, if you want to go to the Olympics as a sevens rugby player, or if you want to be Katie Taylor, or if you want to be whoever, that you can be. And that's what's really exciting for me, that these opportunities are there for young girls growing up now. And I suppose I want to be part of the next generation being involved, whether it's in AFL, Gaelic football, whatever it is, to help them get to where they want to be. What the next couple of months looks like for me, I'll stay in Ireland probably till into September, early October. Again, I'm a little bit tied between my club in Carnacona and the Giants in Australia. I'm due out Australia technically at the start of September. All going to plan with COVID, that could change. But again, the club are nice enough to let me stay at home for a little bit longer and play with a club for a while, and obviously help them get to a county final and hopefully win one. So I'll head out to Australia probably after that. It's all COVID dependent and stuff like that. In the short term, I'll work with RTÉ up to All-Ireland final stages. Head back to Australia probably in the next 2.5 months or less. So it's just getting ready. We start pre-season I think in about 5 weeks time, so we're just on programs leading into pre-season. It's basically work and training for me, and then it's back to Australia. Just want to wish the very best of luck to everyone running the VHI Virtual Women's Mini Marathon on the 19th of September.
Fair play. You've reached the end of your 60 minutes and the end of this episode. Next up, get ready for the final episode and your 75-minute session with Emer McLysett and Sarah Breen, creators of the Aisling Book Series. Please rate, subscribe and share the podcast with friends so we can help others work their way towards completing the VHI Women's Mini Marathon or any 10K route after that. You can register for this year's event at vhiwomensminimarathon.ie. Good luck on the rest of your journey.